God, I'll do it alone. I offer myself to you to build with me and to do with me as you will. Relieve me of the bondage of self that I may better do your will. Take away my difficulties, that victory over them may bear witness to those I will help of your power, your love, and your way of life. May I do your will always. My name is Brenda. I'm a recovering lesbian, Hispanic, Catholic, alcoholic, drug addict, full-figured woman. Y'all can go if you want. You want to sit or you want to stay? All right. The guy next to me is like, we're getting the hell out of here. Me da mucho gusto estar con ustedes esta noche. Le doy gracias primeramente a Dios por la vida que me ha concedido. Y con su permiso voy a hablar en inglés. For those of you who don't know Spanish, what I said was, hello. I was going to color my hair and get a perm, and I was gonna lose weight, and I was gonna buy a new outfit to see, but I didn't think of all of that until I was in the elevator on the way down. And then I thought, well, if that's what they care about, they probably aren't going to hear a damn thing I'm going to say anyway. So this is a come-as-you-are conference. Yeah, absolutely. I'm very glad to be here. Did you know that there's a mountain outside the front door? Don't miss that. I just got here and wow. You know? We flew in yesterday, and we passed this mountain, and there was snow on it. That's incredible. That's really incredible. I'm glad to be here. I should probably be way more nervous than I am, but I'm not. And part of that is because I'm not going to make up anything I'm going to share with you. Yeah, it's all pretty much the truth. Unless I think of a really funny story, and then I'm going to tell that. But I really am glad to be here, and I like to tell people what I'm going to share about, and then they can decide whether or not they need to hear any of it, because, you know, there is a drag show later, and God forbid we should run into that time, so. So I'm going to tell you what I'm going to talk about, and then you can decide whether or not you want to stay, right? Thank you, sir. Because I want to know, is the speaker going to suck? You know? We're going to invest an hour, you know? The answer is no. By the way, feel free to laugh out loud. It is okay, man. I see some of you going... And it just looks scary from here, okay? By the grace of God, I haven't had to drink or do drugs to change the way I feel since July the 3rd of 1990. I'm grateful to be clean and sober today. It's funny because when I started speaking Spanish, there were several people that looked around and was like, is this going to be bilingual? No, but in a minute when I get going, I'll forget how to speak English, so I may hit the SAP button without any warning. So I am glad to be here. I don't talk a lot about what it was like because I got that part already over with, and I think you got that part down. All right? I don't know. It's not a big deal to everybody, but to me, man, I don't know. Sometimes I hear speakers that are like 48 years sober, and they get to that like the last 4 minutes, which is okay, except that's the stuff I have trouble with today. How do you stay sober with the people in your home group without homicide or any of that going on, you know? So I'll tell you, my drunken log is about 3 sentences long. I drank at the beginning so that I could feel good. And then somewhere I started drinking so that I could feel normal. And then at the end I was drinking so I wouldn't have to feel at all. I took my first drink when I was 12. I took it up as a career and it lasted 12 years at that point. I sobered up when I was 24. Don't strain yourselves. I think I'm like 38 years old. I don't know. You know, see, I'm going to do all the work for you. You know, relax. The remedial corner. I like them already. And by the way, I so love that we have a quiet room thing. That was so cute. It's actually called Time Out. Okay? I didn't think there was anything wrong with the way I drank because everybody around me drank the same way. I'm one of 9 kids. I have 6 sisters, 2 brothers, 23 nephews and nieces, 11 great-nephews and nieces, 1 mom and 1 dad. You don't have to clap for me. I didn't do any of it. None of them are mine. And I just share that with you because there was a lot of people to make amends to. So if you're balking at your list, and everybody has suggestions as to how I should do this. You know, I hear people say, you know, well, when you go share your story, be sure you talk about the steps. And then they say, well, be sure that you read out of the book. They'll be impressed. And then it's like, don't read out of the book. They can read it on their own. You know, don't cuss. You know, damn, I already said hell earlier, didn't I? And all of those are really good suggestions, except that if I'm concentrating on that stuff, I'll forget what it was I came to tell you. So I'm going to talk about relationships and surrender and prayer and power and hope and joy and grief and love and holding on and letting go. And I'm going to talk about God. That pretty much covers it. And when I call it God, I don't know what else to call it. It's whatever made the mountain outside without me. Ah. It's whatever makes the sun come up in the morning without me being out there to supervise. It's whatever will take a seed and turn it into a tomato. I don't know how to do that. So when I say God, I just don't know what else to call it. So please don't let the poverty of my own language stand in the way. Everything about my life hurt. I was 24 years old. I'd just become, you know, legal to drink in the state of Texas. And the party was coming to an end. And I was so mad about that. Okay? And I didn't actually think I had a problem with alcohol, but I did know I had a problem with my father. So for some strange reason, I looked up an alcohol treatment facility because I thought maybe, you know, they could keep him for a little bit. So I called them and I said, listen, I had a problem with my dad. I think he's an alcoholic and I really, really would like for y'all to take care of that. And they said, oh, that's so cute. What are you doing? Nothing. The lady said, why don't you come on down to the treatment facility? We'd like to, you know, talk a little bit. And I thought, they probably want money, so I guess I'll go write them a check, and then they'll come for him, right? So I went, and she said, we have family day, and it's on Tuesdays. Come on. And so on Tuesday, I went. And all the patients in treatment, their family showed up. And there was a couple who didn't have family members. So I walked around and I said, is your family here? Yes. Okay. Is your family here? And there was a guy that nobody came. I said, okay, that's me. I'm going to be your family. Well, he was still loaded, so he didn't care. And so I stayed, and we talked about stuff, and they gave us information, and we role-played. You know, I was working out some issues with him and had never met him before 8 o'clock that morning, you know. And so they said, it's for 4 Tuesdays. And so I went every Tuesday. And I felt really close to them when it was over. And the last Tuesday, the woman who was there said, we're going to go to a meeting. Would you like to go? And I said, yeah. And she said, get in the van. Now, I wasn't real bright, but I didn't want to get in the van. So I got in the van, and there we go. In the 15-passenger, you know, they're too dangerous to drive in now vans, but ooh, they hauled us around in them. So we go to the meeting, and they said the AA meeting's over here and the Al-Anon meeting's over here. So I waved at all of them and went on into Al-Anon, you know, and stayed in there. And then the lady said, there's a meeting here tomorrow night. This was, and I said, okay. She said, it was a women's meeting. Why don't you come? Okay. Yeah, that sounds good. I'll be here. She said, here's my phone number, call me. And I'm like, all right. So I thought of several hundred reasons why I couldn't go the next day. And I picked up the phone several times to call her to tell her I couldn't go. And nothing sounded really good. So I showed up to the meeting. It's a women's meeting. And I got to the door and she said, look, I brought you this far. If you're coming in, you got to come in alone. So I stepped into the threshold, across the threshold and into AA. And I sat around and I was really interested in what women alcoholics look like. Because I had no idea, you know. I thought, ooh, they're going to look funny without teeth. But, you know, I was willing. And I looked around and all I saw was 12 white women. And when the meeting was over, they all came up and introduced themselves. And there was a woman who came over. She goes, hi, my name is Pam. I'm like, first, shut up, okay? Because I figured out maybe I belonged in AA, but I wasn't necessarily happy about the news. She says, we're going to the kettle. Would you like to come with us? I'm like, yeah. She said, okay, get in the van. Now, that crap had already happened to me one time. I had already worked it out. I said, that is so, I'm going to take my car, but I'm going to meet you there. She said, oh, get in the van. I thought, oh, what happened to, hi, my name is Pam. So I got in the van. And we drove to the kettle, and they set us in the back at a really long table. And all of a sudden, I looked down the table, saw these 12 white women, and the image of the Last Supper came to me. They said, there's a meeting tomorrow at 11 o'clock. Will you come to the... And I'm like, oh, God. I said, yes, I'll be there. In my own car. Okay? So I go to the meeting the next day, and then there's a fight out in the Lizard Lounge, you know, the place for people too good to come into the actual meeting. But there was a fight out there, and this guy took his mug and hit this other guy on the head, and there was blood, and the cops came and the ambulance, and I thought, oh, home. So I start making meetings, and I'm trying to pay attention, and I'm not happy to be there. And I would go to meetings, and I'd bring the newspaper. And the meeting would start, and I'd open it. And there was this guy, and he was, like, really pissed about that. So when it was his turn to share, he's like, and if you want to read the newspaper, you need to... And I'm like, ooh, I like him. So the next day, I brought the newspaper and my headphones. Now, they weren't on, but I couldn't let you know that. You know, they'd say, would you like to share? And I said, yes, I'd like to just tell you all, I think you're full of crap. And I'm editing, okay? But that's kind of where we went with that. And they'd say, oh, good, come back tomorrow. And I'm So I start going to meetings, and I'm trying to pay attention. And Pam, little meek Pam, you know, came to me and said, listen, you need a sponsor. Thank you, sir. That's how I felt. She said, and I'm it. So here's my number again. Call me. And I said, when do I call you? She said, call me anytime you have an idea. Because I didn't have a whole lot going on for me, but I had a lot of ideas. And by the way, if you're new, your problems, all those people that stood up earlier, your problems do not scare us, no matter what they are. Your solutions scare the shit out of all of us. And you can do whatever you want. You might just want to run it by somebody. So I'm at the AA club. I'm not happy to be there. I'm just trying to put days together, whatever, you know. And then this woman comes up to me. She said, come here just a minute. She said, why don't you pick up all of the ashtrays and dump out the ashes in the trash can? I said, oh, it's because I'm brown. No, we're going to have to nip this in the bud today. So I went to the furthest corner of the AA room and picked up the square pile this high with ashes and flung it the distance of the AA room into a trash can. She said, come here. I thought, you know what? I'm wound a little tight right now. I'd be more than glad to kick your ass. All right? So I went over there and I said, I was like this far away from her. I said, can I help you with something? She said, yeah. She said, we're not going to start you off with ashtrays. She said, why don't you pick up the styrofoam coffee cups? I felt like I had been demoted. So I kept going to meetings, and I'm kind of hanging out with people, and there was this guy there, and he had like 2 years, which was like a lot of time, and his name was Pat. And we were cleaning up the club one day, you know, I was, you know, trying to be promoted to ashtrays. And I told him, I said, Pat, I said, I don't know what's wrong with me. I said, I've been coming to meetings. I'm trying to call Pam. I'm doing the best I can, and I want to drink. And I'm afraid I'm going to drink. And he says, you know what? I have been exactly where you are. I know exactly what you're talking about, and I know how to get out of there. And I'm like, oh, thank you, God. He said, if you feel like you want to drink and you don't want to, what you need to do is you need to sleep with me. So I went out into the lobby of the AA room, and I picked up the phone, and I said, Pam? This is Brenda. Yeah, I'm up at the AA club, and I was telling Pat that I wanted to have a drink, and he said I should sleep with him, and that sounded like an idea. So I wanted to run that by you. It's for you. Yeah. was, she said to him, but I never saw him again. I'm hoping that that eventually showed up on her four step, okay? So, I don't know, I wasn't paying attention, and somehow I accidentally enrolled in the college. I literally came to in an English literature before the 1800s class. Had no idea what I was doing there. I just looked at the little book, and I picked the one that required the least amount of math and went with that. And so I'm trying to stay sober. I'm going to meetings. I'm mopping and just trying to work the steps and just doing the best I can. And then I got a note from the college that says, you're 12 hours from graduating. You might want to come file a degree plan. Now, during all this time, I'm trying to put things together with my brothers and sisters. You know, I created a lot of wreckage there. Mostly, not because I was an alcoholic or because I was bad or anything. I just created a lot of damage there because I didn't know how to do it, and I didn't know how to tell the truth about that. So when they wanted more from me than I could give them, I made that about them. That's what I needed to make amends for. That was the exact nature of my wrongs. So I'd show up to all of their little kids' stuff, okay? Little Olympics, Special Olympics, music recitals, poetry readings. By the way, I've heard more violins than should really be required of any sober person. But I'd like make signs and streamers and banners and run along the side of the street, you know, Eric's aunt. And they're like, wow, she's sober, huh? When my nephew, my 18-year-old nephew, got his driver's license, I was at the DMV with pom-poms and a cowbell, you know? Which is okay, but not so much when you're 18 and trying to be cool. But that's how I, like, went about repairing that damage. And, you know, things had been strained with my father most of my life. I remember having one conversation with him, as a matter of fact. We didn't get around to that, him holding me on his lap and looking at me and saying, you know what? You are so beautiful. I love you so much. Of all the little girls that God could have given me, I'm so glad I got you. We didn't get to that part. The first conversation I remember having with him, I was 13 years old. He called me into his bedroom and he says to me, you know what? I am so tired of how hard you make life for your mother. You disgust me. When your mother dies, I better not see one goddamn tear in your mouth or I'm going to knock every goddamn tooth out of your mouth. Do you understand me? I said, yep, got it. He said, all right. That was it. So I went and I got sober and I'm enrolled in school and I get this letter and I'm doing the best I can. And then... graduation day came. They let me graduate from college. I have a teaching degree. That's scary. You could clap, it's okay. Yeah. But on graduation day, I walked into the Coliseum in San Angelo, Texas, which is where I was born and raised, and I looked up over my left shoulder. There's a whole section with all my little nephews and nieces and my brothers and sisters, and they have streamers and signs, and they say, she's all right, you know? And it was really cool. And you know how they call your name, and then they move you through like cattle and stuff? Not so much. They had made an announcement that if you didn't actually have a diploma in your envelope, that you could go to the registrar's office on Monday. I'm like, they call my name. I'm like, hold up. And I opened my envelope right there on stage because we were going to have an issue. And it was in there. It was in there, my certificate. And I looked up, and in all those people, I caught my father's eye. And for the first time in my life, I saw something there besides disappointment. And he went. And I went. The morning of graduation, I went on an interview. The principal was sitting behind the desk. He asked me, you know, I see here that you graduated from high school in 1984, and then you started college in 1990. What were you doing in the time between those times? Fair question. I said, I was busy. He said, you want the job? I said, yep. So I got a job. And the guy, there was this military guy in my class. There were 83 people in my graduating class, and three of us got jobs. He was pretty pissed about that. You know, he says, you know, the only reason they gave you that job is because you're a woman and you're Hispanic. I said, it's about time it paid off. The irony of it all is that now they want us all to speak Spanish in the classroom. Isn't that cute? It's another issue. Leave it alone. So I go to teach. I teach sixth grade, Hormoneville, as I like to call it, and my kids are loving it. We're having a great time. You know, I'm just kind of showing up and doing whatever we want to do. I'm like, what do you want to learn about today? And then they'd say, whoa, why don't we learn how? And so we'd go in that direction. And the first year I taught, my kids scored a perfect 100 on their math tax test and on their reading. Perfect hundreds, yeah. Which is, you know, by the way, we judge, you know, who goes to heaven these days. But so anyway, the superintendent's office called and said, we'd like to know if you'll teach an in-service to about 800 teachers and tell them how you did that, because we really all need to be going in that direction. I said, I'd love to. So all these teachers show up for this in-service, and I said, do you have any questions? And they're like, yes. I want to know how it is that you manage to help the children master the objective where it requires a manipulation. I thought, man, you know, that woman just explained the dropout rate to me. I said, look, you know what? I don't know what you just said, but I'm going to answer a question. I said, the stuff the superintendent's office sent, you know, the billboard, bulletin board stuff, we didn't use any of it. It's in the closet. We're going to recycle, but we didn't unpack it. I said, every day I went to work and I showed up and I did my own work. I did my own grief. I worked on my own anger. I worked on my crap so that when I went to school, I showed up physically, mentally, emotionally, and spiritually for these kids. And they grow up thinking that there's not anything wrong with them. That's what I did. I said, go do that or go do something else. Don't be in a place where the future comes to you every day. They never let me teach another in-service again. The little kids in class were so cute. One of them fainted one time, and I thought, he's playing kick 'em. Well, as it turns out, he had actually fainted. We call the ambulance. They come for him. Off he goes. And about 2 o'clock, he comes wandering back into class, and he said, my mom wants to see you. She's outside. I have to tell y'all, I actually thought, I wonder if he remembers being kicked. So I went outside and I said, what's the matter? I said, what's he doing here? He said, they don't know. He had some sort of seizure or something and they've run some tests. I said, why is he at school? She said, Ms. Hassel, he said he didn't want to miss anything. He said that if he fainted, that you'd know what to do. There were like rubber chickens flying from the fans in my room. It was okay. I gave those kids everything I needed when I was 12. That's why they passed. That's why it didn't matter. So I get to the end of my first week of school, and my little sister called me at work, and I thought, that's pretty cool. She's calling to congratulate me on like actually finishing a week of anything. So I got on the phone and she said, Brenda, I wanted to call you to tell you we took Dad to the hospital and he has cancer. And they're going to operate on Monday and you need to come over here. And I hung up the phone and I started crying because I was sober and I didn't want to go. And I went over there to his house and I went into the back bedroom and it was dark in there and he was sitting on the hospital bed on the other side of the room and there was one on this side of the room and I sat down and I looked at him and he looked like a little old man for the first time in my life. He looked like a little old man and he looked like a four-year-old little boy. And then this question came to me and it was, can you do for your father what he couldn't do for you? And I said, yep. And I went over and I sat next to my dad so that my knee touched his and my shoulder touched his. And I looked over at him and I said, Dad, I want you to know that I love you so much. I want you to know I'm so glad I got you. Of all the men that God could have given me to be my father, I'm glad I got you. And my father started to sob. And he stood up, and I stood up. And for the first time in my life, he put his arms around me. And I put my arms around my father, and for the first time, took a breath. Through a set of circumstances, I ended up leaving San Angelo and moving to Dallas a year and a half ago. And I was on my way to work. I got a job teaching for DISD. And I was on my way to work on November 4th, and my sister called and said, Dad's sick, you got to come. And I went home to San Angelo. And I went home, and last Thanksgiving, I was in Houston, Texas at the roundup there. They had told my father that he had 4 weeks to live, and I went to the roundup to go speak because I said I would. I knew it was my father's last Thanksgiving, and I was in Houston because I was sober, because I love Alcoholics Anonymous. I went back to San Angelo after that, and we stayed, all nine of us, for the first time under the same roof with my father for 2 months from November 4th to the beginning of January when we left. But I was giving him the medicine. It was my job, and I'd give him the medicine, and it had come to the point where I'd give him the medicine every hour in the side of his mouth, the liquid morphine. And I went in on Christmas Eve morning, and he was gasping for air. And I said, you know what? This ends today. And everyone was asleep except my older sister. My mother was finally asleep. My sisters were all asleep. And I went into my dad's room, and I put one hand over his eyes, and I closed his eyes. And then I put the other hand on his chest, and I rocked him. And I said the same prayer over and over and over again. And you'll excuse me, this is the first time I've shared publicly about what happened. And so So I rocked my dad back and forth, and when I could feel his desperation, I leaned into him and I put my head on his chest so he could feel me. And everything I'd ever read off the pages in Alcoholics Anonymous went from my soul to his. And I rocked him, and I cried, and I prayed for 2 hours and 45 minutes, and on Christmas Eve at 4:15 in the morning, I thought, these are his last 10 breaths. I knew. And I thought, I should wake my mom. But I knew that it was just he and I. And he took his last 10 breaths. Then he went. And when I knew he'd gone, I stood on my feet and I thanked God. And I went in the other room and I woke up my mom. My little nephews and nieces were all there and they loved Grandpa, and it was just really, really hard. But we did it. We did it. We did the whole service, the whole funeral, the rosary, you know, we did all of that. And it was Christmas time, and somehow little Gabriel decided that Grandpa's favorite song was Jingle Bells. So at the funeral, by popular demand, we were all sobbing uncontrollably, singing Jingle Bell in our Christmas voices. Who gets to do that? Who gets to do that? Anybody who's sober gets to do that. I told God, if you help me get sober, I promise to do everything I can not to miss one more day of my life. And God has made clean on his side of it. And so some days being sober hurts. Some days it's hard. Some days I can't catch my breath. Most days, though, I walk around feeling like I got the tiger by the tail. Most days, I'm filled with that knowing that all will be well here and hereafter. My mother's very, very sad. I went home for Mother's Day. Mother's Day was also my parents' birthday. They share the same birthday a year apart. And so on Mother's Day morning at 9 o'clock, we were all at the graveside. And we sang to my father. And we got ready to go. And Gabriel says, but what about his favorite song? So now here we are on Mother's Day at the graveside in our Christmas voices singing Jingle Bells. My sister called last week to say that that my mother has some sort of internal bleeding, and she started to vomit up some blood, and they were going to schedule her for a test yesterday. And I'm in Los Angeles. I'm in Los Angeles because it's God's work that we do. I'm in Los Angeles because I said I would be. I'm in Los Angeles because I need you. And it's something to, after 14 and a half years, stand in front of a group of people you've never met before and say, I need you. I need you to stay sober. I need you to tell me how you did it. I need you to tell the truth, to not be afraid, to try, to fail, to make it, and stay here. I came because it's God's work we do. And I have to tell you, life is good. It says, we're not a glum lot. Now, some of y'all look like a glum lot, but But that's neither here nor there. I love Alcoholics Anonymous. I love being here. If you're new, welcome home. If you think that this is your last one and you're leaving, don't go. We'll miss you. If you're one of those people that's coming to Alcoholics Anonymous and you feel left out, don't do that. Come sit next to me. There's a chair for you. You know, we do that. We do that. We get to AA and we pick people who look like us and talk like us, and then we all sit together. And we forget the smelly people, the ugly people, the less than desirable people, and we leave them over there on the edges, on the fringes of Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm thinking they're the ones that hold the truth. We might not all want to leave them out there because we're going to need them. I love that. The people who've been out there is like, yeah! Now they're thinking, God, I gotta buy the tape. What did she say? Whatever she said, that's the truth. I ended up having to tell my mom before I moved to Dallas that I was gay. She knew, but it was different when you get the memo. Right? Yeah. Now, this is my very Catholic step in when the Pope is not available, mother. All right? Who, if I can grow up to be a fraction of the woman she is, I will be completely grateful. So I go to her and I say, Mom, I wanted you to know I've got instructions from God. I got to move to Dallas. I'm going to go to the Perkins School of Theology. I got to go da, 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 da. And I just wanted you to know that I'm gay. I could tell you that I'm going to go. And I didn't want to stop talking because she knows the rules of conversation. And if I were to actually take a breath, she'd think it was her turn. But at some point, I ran out and I just stopped. And she turned around and she looks at me. She goes, let me tell you something. I was afraid because I thought that for the first time in my life, I was going to hear God's voice coming from one direction and my mother's voice coming from another. That had never happened to me, and I thought this was it. And she said, let me tell you something. She said, I want you to know that I believe that there's room in God's world for everybody. She said, I love you. I love you more than I love my other kids. She said, I love you more because you are gay. There is no doubt in my mind that this is exactly what God wants for you. Not only do you have my support, you go with my blessing. And at that point, I said, hey, Mom, about Dad? She said, I got it. So I don't know if he actually knew that I like sleeping with women or that I was just really happy and gay. Then I went to go tell my brothers and sisters. And I went to my oldest brother, Michael, and I said, Michael, I said, I want you to know that I'm moving to Dallas. I said, I'm gay and I'm going to go. And that's what the directions are. And I had to come tell you. And he started to come around the bar in his house and I grabbed my keys. I'm like, woo, got to go. He came around the bar and he threw his arms around me and he said, you know what? I love you. Everybody got their thing. And if that's your thing, I'm all right with it. He said, and if anybody give you any shit, you let me know. That was really cute because I've been in charge of my own ass-kicking committee for a long time, you know? And the fact that he was going to step up and do that, nothing says I love you like I'm willing to whoop somebody for you. And I went to my brothers and sisters, and my sisters all cried, and they said, you know what, we're going to miss you. You've sacrificed your whole life for the lives of our children. Go do this. And I miss my family. I miss my brothers. I miss my sisters. I miss my nephews and nieces. And it was funny because when I was there on Mother's Day, I said to little Gabriel, I said, Gabe, now, he understood what had happened to Grandpa and then didn't quite get that, why we got to put him in the ground thing, okay? So I explained to him as best I could. We put him in the ground because that's where the train comes to take him to where God lives. I don't know. It'll work. He'll be real pissed later, but, he's three. He's three, okay? So we're standing at my dad's gravesite, and he's looking into the ground. He says, I think I want to wait till the train comes. So when I was there for Mother's Day, I said, Gabriel, tomorrow we're going to sing to Grandpa. And he had this look of horror on his face. He said, we're all going to heaven tomorrow. No, they can hear us from here. He's like, woo, good. Those are the little things that happen, and I'm sober for them. You know, I'll be driving around in the car with little Juan, and he looks around, and he said, hey, it was falling, and the wind had blown. He said, "Where did all the tops to the trees go? That's a good question. We passed by Blockbusters, and he said, look, that's where all the movies sleep. Now, if I take a drink, I miss all of that, right? I take a drink, I miss all of that. And the relationships I have with those people today are just incredible, you know? And it hasn't all been easy, and it, by God, has not at all been pretty. Okay? But the step, it said, by the way, I figured out you cannot, I can't stay sober being on the dance committee, picking up chairs, having the most friends, buying the best clothes. I can't stay sober like that. I have got to work the steps. Here are the steps we took, which are suggested as a program of recovery. One time I called my sponsor, I said, I'm going to institutions, I'm sponsoring women, I don't know what else to do. She's like, did you work the steps? I'll call you back. And all I'm saying is and this is so important, especially if you're new or if you're old and bored. This is important. This is important. The only wrong way to work the steps, in my experience, is to leave them undone. Anything but that works just fine. You know, and I'm living proof that it don't have to be pretty. Because I made my list and I went about making amends and so forth and so on. And I wish I could tell you I got sober and I got better, but not entirely. Exhibit A. I was about, 6 years sober. I went to the video store and I said, I'd like to rent this video. And I'd seen on the wall where it said 99 cents. I get up there, the lady says, that's $2.99. I said, oh, hell no. It ain't $2.99. It's 99 cents. You know what? Y'all just messing with me. I don't need... You know what? Now, while I'm throwing this tirade, the little stock guy goes to get the sign, and it says $2.99. So I did the only dignified, sober thing I could. I said, you know what? I don't want it. And I stomp out of the place. Sober. But to prove to you that I'm sober, I didn't even have to call my sponsor on this one. I got it. I was crying before I got to the car. I knew I was wrong. I knew I had to go promptly. It doesn't say we probably admitted it. It said we promptly admitted it. So I go back in the store, right? Now I'm like crying, okay? I gotta wait in line. So I'm standing at the video store sobbing uncontrollably. And people are like, what movie were you looking for? Can we get her a free rental? So I finally get up there. There's people everywhere. And I said, I just wanted you to know that I knew I was wrong and I should not talk to you that way. I went on and on and snot's flying, and I mean, I said, and I want you to know I'm gonna do my best not to ever do that again. The little girl working, she said, "Ma'am, I have never seen you before in my life." She said, "But I do believe you're looking for Brittany, and she's working in the back now." I want y'all to know, I wanted so bad to say, "Could you tell her?" There I go to the back of the store to go do it again. People were cracking up. They have stopped shopping. They're like, "Look, there she goes. Look, look." "Which one's Brittany? Which one's Brittany? Where's she?" So it ain't gotta be pretty. It's just gotta be done. And that, you know, I work them. They work. Work the steps. They work. 14 and a half years, haven't come across one thing it hasn't worked on. It says almost any experienced AA will show that out of every season of grief, when the hand of God seemed heavy and even unjust, new lessons for living have been learned, new courage has been uncovered, and finally, inescapably, the conviction has come that God does move in mysterious ways his wonders to perform. I didn't make it up. I don't know what page it's on, but it's in there. And by the way, I love to quote stuff out of the book, even, you know, and people are like, "That ain't in the book." But the beautiful thing is that now they're reading the book to tell me what's not in there. Whatever it takes. I remember there was an old timer in the group where I sobered up in, and I was like, I don't know, I guess like at like 8 days sober. And I described how cheerful I was, remember? And I walked in and he said, "Listen, you know they have Spanish speaking meetings over by the railroad tracks, right?" Hey, don't get ahead of me. So I went into the meeting and I said, "Hey, y'all know how y'all don't like to talk about the big elephant sitting in the living room? Y'all got one up in here. But I want y'all to know I paid my dues for this chair in this club, and I found out y'all can't kick me out. So just because of that, I think I'm just going to speak Spanish all the time." And it worked out great because he thought it was all about him. None of it was about him, but I couldn't let him know that. Being sober has been absolutely wonderful. It's been the hardest, most beautiful thing I've ever done. And for the chance to come to Los Angeles, California, it's only my second time out here. And I just started speaking in meetings like this, I guess about a year and a half ago. So for those of you that actually know how to do it, sorry. But hopefully next time it'll be your turn. And I did the best I could. And I'm going to read something to you out of the book and then I'm going to go, okay? Because we don't want to run into the drag show time, all right? To the committee, thank you so very, very much. You've given me gifts I truly do not deserve. To the rest of you, I can't wait to spend the weekend with you. Feel free to hug me anytime, okay? Yeah. And from what I understand, based on the announcements before the meeting, after this, I'm going to be moved out into the hall. I wouldn't miss that if I were y'all. If you need a hug, I'm going to be standing out there, and I don't care till what time. Don't even come tell me she was too busy and there was too many people. If I'm going to stand, you wait and come on. If you want what we have, you do what we do. Go ask for what you need. Nobody's going to die. It is okay. Tell the truth. Tell the truth. I'm feeling left out. I feel like I don't belong. I want to go to lunch with you. I want to feel included. All of it. Tell the truth. It's okay. Tell it to me. I'll hear it. Don't leave here without getting what you need. No matter what it is, if it's God's work, all will be well. If it's not, you better call your sponsor. People are turning their cell phones on right now. One time I heard a guy, I was talking in a meeting and I shared that, you know, how important sponsorship was, you know, and this guy was like really, really pissed. And when the meeting was over, he got in his truck and he followed me home. Yeah. And I didn't actually want to take him all the way to my house because, you know, I didn't want him to know where I live. So I pulled over into his little garage and he gets out of his truck and he stomps to where I am. I got out of the car. And he says, you know what? I don't appreciate you telling me I need a sponsor because I don't need one. I'm doing just fine. Remember? And I say, hold up. Hey, dude, if what you're doing is working so well, why are you following me home? And I share that with you just because if you're that mad about anything I said, okay. Still more wonderful is the feeling that we do not have to be specially distinguished among our fellows in order to be useful and profoundly happy. Service gladly rendered. Obligations squarely met. Troubles well accepted or solved with God's help. The knowledge that at home and in the world outside, we are partners in a common effort. The well-understood fact that in God's sight, all human beings are important. The proof that love freely given surely brings a full return. The certainty that we no longer need to live isolated and alone in self-constructed prisons. The surety that we no longer need to be square pegs in round holes, but fit and belong in God's scheme of things. These are the permanent and legitimate satisfactions of right living for which no amount of pomp and circumstance, no heap of material possessions could ever substitute. True ambition is not what we thought it to be. True ambition is a deep desire to live usefully and to walk humbly under the grace of God. God bless you. Thank you. I love you. That's it.